We're going to go into the first presentation. Dr. Yuman Fong, Chief of Surgery at City of Hope, talk about the gallbladder polyps in the age of minimal invasive surgery.
Thank you, Hoshi. So welcome to our session, and I'm just going to start here. That's because when I graduated from medical school in 1984, this was where life was, and I had not, the gallbladder cancer had not much changed since 1924, when Alfred Blalock first said, in malignancy of the gallbladder, when a diagnosis can be made without exploration, no operations should be performed in as much as it only shortens the patient's life. That's because back then, there was no scanning of any quality, and gallbladder cancer was usually found late, and when found late, generally, there's not much you can do about it, and most patients with stage 3 and 4 disease die, okay? And so the biggest change that we actually made was actually discovering the early gallbladder cancers, particularly the really early T1, T2 stages in the polyps. And so how to handle a polyp matters. So in 1978, this was the state of the art, 5,836 cases in the literature, 4% 5-year survival. Resection resulted in a 16% 5-year survival, and no one basically lives unless they are resected, and the overall mean survival was 2 to 5 months. In fact, when patients ask me when they have disseminated disease how long they're going to live, I say 4 months because it is that terrible. And again, back then, no scanning. We discovered gallbladder cancer when it's late. But the epidemiology is this, 70 to 98% associated with gallstone. So that's why most of the time, if it's found incidentally, it's because we're doing gallstone disease surgery. That's why be vigilant. Most cases that are curable are discovered when someone's thinking they're removing a gallbladder for gallstones, or they're working somebody up for gallstones, and they discover that either a porcelain gallbladder, 10% of those are cancerous, and they discover polyps, and 5% of polyps are either precancerous or cancerous, and it's a rare disease in this country. Only about 2,000 cases a year, and unless we were vigilant, we won't find them. So this is a case that I saw where somebody took it out thinking that was not realizing that this was a cancer. So again, be vigilant when you get the sonogram, when you get the CT for suspected gallstones and biliary colic, look for a possible malignant polyp, okay? Sometimes it's a bit more subtle, okay? This is another cancer that was a T2 gallbladder cancer that was discovered on CT for biliary colic. Sometimes it's really subtle, okay? And again, this is another case of a T2 gallbladder cancer with a distended gallbladder, okay? And choosing what to do depends both on which side the polyp is on, as well as how distended the gallbladder is. And that's because, again, grabbing onto one of these gallbladders when we're trying to do laparoscopic surgery or robotic surgery, you risk rupture, and I'll go through what happens with rupture, and therefore it matters how we think about this disease. And again, classification of polyps, prevalence, about 1% of times that we scan people by sonography we'll see a polyp, and most of them are benign, meaning that they're pseudopolyps, inflammatory, focal adenomyosis, cholesterol polyps. These are the multiple little deposits of cholesterol in the submucosal space. And the neoplastic polyps, the adenomas and the carcinomas, and again, precancerous and cancerous, that's about 5% of cases, okay? And it's very clear. What are the things that predict that they're going to be bad? And it's age, advanced age. Some say 50, some say 60. Size of polyp, number of polyps, and number more than one is actually good. A single polyp is actually bad, okay? And morphology of polyp, meaning sessile. If something is a wide-based, single, and it's in an elderly patient, and it is more than a centimeter, it is highly likely to be something bad. And so these are the ROC curves, depending on whether you choose 6-millimeter cutoff, 10-millimeter cutoff, and 15-millimeter cutoff. And most people will choose 10 millimeters as their cutoff for when we decide to take them out. Under 5 millimeters, very few cases of reported cancer, okay? And so somewhere between 5 and 10 if it's really somebody young, but over 10, should consider removing them. And then the other finding that has been mentioned by a number of authors is really wall thickening without pericholecystic fluid. Okay, so if you are doing a sonography or a CT and you see this mass on the gallbladder and there is no fluid around it to suggest cholecystitis, then worry about malignancy. Okay, and so this is the usual algorithm. Somebody is symptomatic, you should do a cholecystectomy, greater than 10 centimeter sessile mucosal disruption. And then again, there are other relative indications for going and doing cholecystectomy. But if it's small, multiple, doing a sonography follow-up would be fine. And sonography is probably better than any other modality for looking at polyps in the gallbladder and following size of gallbladder. It's not necessary to go and radiate patients or give contrast material. So open a laparoscopic cholecystectomy, okay? This is always argued depending on the expertise of the individual. And my rule is, do you think you'll rupture it or not, okay? If you think you could actually deal with it without rupture and you're really good at doing a minimal invasive resection, then that's absolutely fine. But this is what happens with rupture. Bile spillage, no bile spillage, 6 months versus 46 months median survival, greater than 46 months median survival. And so again, rupture is bad, okay? And now with the robotic approaches, folks will actually grab onto the cystic plate onto the liver and not grab the gallbladder at all. And I'll come through and talk a little bit later about how to go and take out one of these gallbladders without actually getting into the wrong plane. Laparoscopic resection in the past has also been associated with port site recurrences. This is a series of 2,600 laparoscopic cholecystectomies, 24 cancers found, and more than 10% with port site recurrence. That's actually what we found. This is our experience at Sloan Kettering. We actually took care of 113 incidentally discovered gallbladder cancers, 69 who had port site resection, because some of us there had thought about removing the port sites for staging, and 19% had port site metastases. And when that happens, median survival is 17 months, the negative port sites 42 months. So I do it mainly as a staging procedure. It's very rare that you'll take a port site that's positive out and have someone not recur in the peritoneum. But I do it for staging, because if there are no negative and you don't find residual disease in the liver, this would be my excuse for giving patients adjuvant chemotherapy. And it is not always the belly button, okay? If you're going to go cut out port sites, the subxiphoid port is as likely to recur as any other site. This particular patient actually came to me as a port site recurrence and lived for 14 years and died of something entirely different after excision of this. But this is unusual. Usually, when somebody has a port site recurrence, they're about to have a peritoneal recurrence. And I used to say you should always consider doing them all open, simply because T1 tumors are cured with complete resection. T2 tumors have a very high rate of cure, and anything more than T1A, you need to do a lymphadenectomy, and there's a risk of port site recurrence. Therefore, the few days, the extra day or two in the hospital and an extra couple of weeks of recovery is a small price to pay for a higher rate of cure, okay? And so that's what I used to say to patients. Now, if the tumor is really on, the polyp is really on the peritoneal side of the gallbladder, and I thought I could grab on the cystic plate robotically, and now it's so easy to go do a lymphadenectomy if necessary robotically, that I tend to do it that way. Now, Anton's going to talk a bit more about the T1B. The reason I'm going to mention a little bit here is simply because most polyps are either T1Bs or T2s when you first discover them. And Coburn's paper looking at the SEER data between 1998 and 2003, over 6,000 gallbladder cancers, 10% were T1s, and about half of them were T1As. No, I'm sorry, 200 of them were T1As, and 400 of them was T1Bs. And what the difference is this, okay? It's really the muscularis mucosa propria. And whether it actually breaches it or not, it seems like a fine point, crossing that plane changes entirely the risk of the lymph node metastasis and the likelihood of leaving it behind on the cystic plate. So I just, again, I just want to show, you know, again, we always show these fancy videos, but here's just a simple cholecystectomy. Most of us, when we take out a gallbladder for gallstones, we work in this plane. This is a subserosal plane. What you see here on the gallbladder is really the muscularis. And the reason we work in this plane is because the only thing that's in this plane are lymphatics and blood vessels crossing. And therefore, it's really easy to dissect the gallbladder off without hurting anything. And so that's why classically, this is what we teach the residents to go do in order to go mobilize a gallbladder. And suddenly, the wall of the gallbladder, the serosa, is actually left behind. That's a cystic plate. And this is really the plane of the lymphatics. That's why a T1B and a T2 gallbladder cancer is not cured by surgery alone in many cases, simply because we're actually leaving the wall of the gallbladder behind on the liver side. And so that's why this is important to go do. And this has been substantiated by a lot of data. This is a Lee's paper, T1A gallbladder cancer, nodal metastases 2%, T1B 11%, recurrence after simple cholecystectomy 1% and 13%. And so there are a lot of papers like this. And that's why when we see a gallbladder gallbladder polyp, we should really say, what if this is a cancer? What operations should we really do? This is Hari's paper, T1B gallbladder cancer, simple cholecystectomy. Here it is with a cholecystectomy plus lymph node dissection. But I want to leave you with this idea, okay? And that's because when somebody comes to see me with a polyp, I don't just do a simple cholecystectomy on them. I do something that the Japanese literature, they've been calling a laparoscopic whole layer cholecystectomy or a laparoscopic gallbladder bed resection with regional lymphadenectomy. So let me explain what that is. This is removal of the gallbladder with the cystic plate. So taking the entire serosa, so the entire cystic plate on the liver, if you take it off the liver, basically you have the whole gallbladder. And if you're in that plane, much less likely you're going to rupture the gallbladder. And I feel much more comfortable coming down that plane. If somebody then has a T1B or a T2 gallbladder cancer, theoretically they will not have transgressed the serosa on the other side. And that probably is an adequate operation. So in this particular paper by Ome, what they were suggesting is that if somebody has suspected benign wall-thickening lesions like chronicocystitis and adenomyosis, or a pedunculated polyp on the peritoneal side, less than 15 millimeters, or a sessile one on the peritoneal side, they would do this. They would just remove the entire gallbladder, including the serosa on the liver side. If somebody actually has a large polyp or a sessile one on the liver side, they will actually take a small rim of liver with the gallbladder and do a lymphadenectomy. And in their series of 63 cases, with median follow-up of over 26 months, there was only one recurrence in this. And that's what I do for patients when they come see me with a gallbladder polyp, is that I excise it, I do a frozen section, see what it says, and the T1B or more, if it turns out to be cancer, we'll get a lymph node dissection. And T1A, I'm done by just removing the entire gallbladder. So that's gallbladder polyp, and I'm going to hand this over to Anton Bilcek from the John Wayne Cancer Center to go talk about T1 and T2 gallbladder cancer.